Imagine stepping into a concert hall filled with dozens of pianos. In order to properly tune these instruments, a skilled technician attends to each keyboard, striking every string to ensure perfect pitch. He does so not by tuning one piano to the next one, but by using a tool, a tuning fork, to maintain the absolute standard for each note. Today on Insight for Living, we'll hear Chuck Swindoll talk about unity and harmony within the church family. In order to strike a perfect chord in any congregation, we must rely on the same unchanging instrument. Today's message is titled United and Invincible.
What the thread is to the sweater, the believer is to the body when assimilated. Assimilation is being absorbed into the life of a unified body. Are you on your way to being? Do you care about being one of those threads? Well, then what's unity? If I refer to a unified body, what is unity? Well, get it this way. It means closing ranks and minimizing our differences. Oh, that's hard for some people to do. It's really hard to flesh out the unifying of the body. Now, the purpose, you see, of unity is that we might become more deeply involved. And what is involvement? Well, a very simple answer is adjusting my life from that of a spectator to a participant. That's involvement. I adapt, I adjust my life so that I see myself as a participant, and I am no longer a spectator coming to watch ministry. How many of you who hear my voice today would have to admit you're merely a spectator? I don't say that to arouse guilt in anyone. I say it simply to point out the fact that we don't think of that. And I don't simply mean teaching in a class somewhere. That may be your assimilation. That may be your involvement. Whatever tag it may wear, it's something more than a Sunday attendance in a worship service. That's it. Now, I'd like you to look with me at Joshua chapter 1, please. We'll sort of begin where we left off the last time. In fact, at the very passage that we looked at, the last point we had earlier. I want you to see where we are in the flow of this book. Now, I'm not going to worry about the strategy of this military conquest. I have given you a chart of it on the back, and you that like that kind of stuff can doodle all over that if you'd like, and that'll kind of guide you into the details of it, and that's fine. But my purpose today is to help you see the thread of unity as it's woven into the fabric of these people called the Hebrews. Remember who they are now, okay? Remember that they are people who have come out of Egypt. Some of them have been born in the wilderness. A few of them remember the days when Moses led them through the Red Sea, but there's a whole generation that's died off, and they are the people who long for Egypt. They're gone. A brand new generation has come on the scene, and they've got their sleeves rolled up, and they're ready to go on into Canaan. They're ready to follow a new leader named Joshua. And the Lord has given him a special pep talk in the first part of the chapter, and now he has told them the plan. And they respond in verse 16 of chapter 1. They're saying, in effect, let's get at it. Let's roll. We're ready. Verse 16. They answered Joshua, all that you have commanded us, we will do. And wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we obeyed Moses in all things, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Anyone who rebels against your command and does not obey your words shall be put to death. Only be strong and courageous. I want to point out in these moments we have together three or four principles that I believe will help you understand the value of unity. The first I want you to see in these three verses is this: they rallied around the leader and the Lord without fear. They rallied around the leader, Joshua, and Jehovah, the Lord, without fear. They didn't know what the future held. They had never once stepped foot into Canaan. It was an unknown territory. It normally would breed intimidation and fear. They could see beyond the Jordan, and they were aware from the grapevine that there were fortified cities over there. But please observe that they're ready to go. Look at the verse 16. All that you have commanded us, we will do. That's cooperation. Wherever you send us, we will go. That's availability. Just as we obeyed Moses, we'll obey you. That's commitment. May the Lord be with you as he was with Moses. Whoever doesn't obey, we'll put him to death. That's loyalty. Be strong and courageous, Joshua. That's encouragement. You get those words? Those are words that describe a unified body of people. Cooperation, availability, commitment, loyalty, encouragement. Interesting twist here, isn't it? The people are encouraging the leader. Did you note that? Rather than the leader saying, come on, you guys, let's get into the land. They're saying to Joshua, go on, let's go. Be encouraged, be strengthened, lead us. Sometime I'll get a letter from a discouraged pastor. I got one recently and it read, "Dear Chuck, how do you as a pastor keep your positive, overcoming attitude about ministry? Sometimes I cannot see the point of working with people who don't want to be challenged, who don't want to learn, who don't want to grow." I wrote him back and I said, "I see your point, and I don't know how I'd handle that either." I offer great counsel when people write me letters. I just write right back and tell them, "That's my wisdom for you today. I don't know how I'd do it either. I don't know what I would do with a congregation of people that just, oh man, we got to do that. Oh, Brad, you doing that again? Oh man, I'm so, we've done that before. Oh boy, we got to go through this again. Somebody tell him, you know. Good night." Now I just praise God we've not had that here at Fullerton. I'm not saying there aren't people around who want to fuss and complain. You always have those people. But for the most part, this is a motivated body of people. You're willing to do whatever's necessary to get it done. I mean, look how you park today. You're willing to give it a try. You're willing to give it a throw. You're saying, let's give it a go. Let's go with it. I was in New England and I watched the demise of a ministry. Heartbreak. It goes back a couple of pastors to make the story clear to you. This church was a good church, good strong building, good strong beginning. It began to fade. They called a new man who was really committed to unity. By the time he got there, the place was virtually empty. Several people were near the back row, that one of those deals. So he literally grabbed the pulpit by the lip, dragged it down the aisle, said, "You don't come to me, I'll come to you." So he brings the pulpit down, sits it down, and he preaches at them. They're in the back of the church. Well, that's a rather unusual guy that'll do that. Preached a positive message, preached encouragement, preached cooperation, and before long it got, you know, kind of infectious. He began to pull his pulpit back toward the choir loft every Sunday. He'd leave it there, and then the next Sunday, more people would come, he'd pull his pulpit back. People come in saying, "What's the pulpit doing in the aisle?" "Well, just sit down, you'll see. It's a very unusual situation." So little by little, the guy winds up almost in the choir loft. Now there's a choir ministry. Now there are two morning services. The thing is growing. It's exciting. And God steps in and leads this man to another ministry. And the people choose the next man who is better educated than the first. Interestingly, the same seminary. And he systematically emptied the church. He could have taken that same pulpit, though he didn't, and dragged it right back down the middle aisle as they left systematically by the dozens. Same people, same Bible, same building, no unity. A broken spirit, mainly because of a man who fought from the pulpit, dealt with relationships by using the pulpit as a hammer. If you've come through a fractured fellowship like that, you'll never forget it. And you long for a place that is on the move. I want to tell you, this is one of those places. Praise God for it. Rallying around the leader and around the Lord without fear. We know it's unknown what the future holds, but you walk with God and we're ready to roll. Let's never lose that spirit. There's another, and this is where the plot thickens. Turn over to chapter 6. Up until now, it's kind of fun and games because nobody's had to fight. The Jordan opens and lets them through and closes back up again, so they're now over in the land, and suddenly they come upon the city of Jericho. Now, you've got a good object lesson of a stone wall. Right behind where I speak is a high stone wall. The difference is the wall around Jericho was higher than that, and believe it or not, thicker than that. So God pulls Joshua aside and says, come here, bud. I got the plan. Now, you just follow along, chapter 6. Jericho was tightly shut. That is the understatement of the book of Joshua. It was really shut. And the Lord said to Joshua, see, I have given Jericho into your hand. Right. Along with its king and valiant warriors. Here's a plan, Joshua. You shall march around the city, all the men of war circling the city once. And you do that for 6 days. Okay, you march around the city. You do that 6 days. Okay. Don't talk too fast. I'm going to write this down. Now, seven priests shall carry seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. Then on the seventh day, okay, seventh day, you shall march around the city seven times. March around the city seven times. And the priests shall blow the trumpets. And it shall be that when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, the people shall shout with the great shout. And a wall will come down. Shout with a great shout. Wall comes down. Now, what's interesting is that the next verse, he has to go tell the people the plan. Isn't that great? Listen, you guys, I got the plan. See that wall? Walk around the wall once a day. On the seventh day, these guys in the back, you know, just sharpening their swords. They're all ready for the battle. We walk around seven times, and then they're going to hear these horns blow, and then you're supposed to scream really loud. You got it? Right. Then the walls are going to come down. Got it. I think that's terrific, you know. Okay, got it. Seven times. Yeah, it's going to come down. The beautiful part of it all is that there is not a bit of resistance or reluctance. You know why? They're unified. You do not read here or later someone saying in his tent that night, you know, this plan about walking around the wall,
stinks.
Nobody says that. You just find them saying, okay, strap on your sandals. Let's go to war. Now, these are not the Israelis of the 1980s or the 70s. These aren't fighting men. These are Bedouins. These are nomads. They've been in the wilderness for 40 years. They've walked across the Jordan, and they're getting ready to walk around a building. They're good at walking, and God says, let's capitalize on your good stuff, so they go around. Go around the building, and the walls are going to fall flat. The amazing thing is, you guys, is that the walls did come down, and not one of them is surprised. Just look. Just follow along this exciting story. Verse 14, the second day they marched around the city once and returned to camp. And they did that again the third day, fourth day, fifth day. They went all the way around, and now the seventh day came about. The seventh day, they rose early in the morning of that day, and they marched around the city seven times. Only that day, they marched around seven times, and it came about the seventh time the priests blew the trumpets, and Joshua said, shout. And they screamed. And there was an 8.7 on the Richter scale that moment, and that stone wall collapsed flat, and they walked in. You don't read a thing in here about the people saying, oh, I can't believe it. The wall came down. It was like God had said. Which brings us to a second principle that we must not forget. Not only had they rallied around the Lord and the leader without fear, now they accepted a new plan and unusual strategy without resistance. A new plan for their future that was unusual, but they said, let's do it. I am not setting you up for a fall. That would be manipulation. I don't know what the new plan in detail is going to be for us, but I want you to know it's going to be something we've never done before. Exactly like it, because we're not exactly like we've ever been before. So we don't need a lot of reminders that say, well, you know, we've never tried this. I mean, or do you realize what might... Yeah, we know that. We're aware of that. All we're asking in this future of our ministry is that we have that absolute confidence that the Spirit of God makes no mistakes in leading this assembly. I'll tell you, the place that's most fun to be is way back in the ranks. It's scary out front. Joshua said, six times, seventh time, seven times around, and the wall will come down. He had never known of it before. It was unheard of, but he said, let's do it. And they did it. I'm simple enough to believe that the same kind of exciting thing can happen to this at this very day. The same kind of resistance can be handled by the Spirit of God. The same kind of walls, the same kind of principle can occur today. And that's the exciting part of a ministry on the move. Beautiful thing is, in verse 20, the people shouted, the priest blew the trumpet. It came about when they heard the sound of the trumpet, they shouted with a great shout, and the wall fell down flat, and they went in and took the city. End of story. But not end of excitement. Something else happens. Chapter 8, they move into the city of Ai. We'll look next time at the defeat there, but I'm on the subject of victory right now, and I want you to see the benefits of this unity. They come to the city of Ai with a little bit of a trepidation because they have failed before for reasons we'll get into later. But now they decide we're going to go God's way. We're going to do it His plan. So the city of Ai is going to be a new approach. It's not like Jericho. As a member, as a body of people is on the move, they will encounter different kinds of challenges. They're never the same. And one kind of Jericho encounter will be different than an Ai type of encounter, okay? Without a lot of spiritualizing the story, they came to a new place, and there's a new strategy that's needed. And to save us some time, I'll tell you how they were going to do it. Joshua 8 is an ambush plan. They're going to have a group of people several thousand of them hide out on one side of the city. Joshua will take another group of people, by several thousand, and they will go and make an attack and draw the attention of the people in Ai. And there's another group hiding out in secret, and when Joshua and his troops pretend as though they're being beaten and they run, Ai empties. And they all come to defeat the Israelis, and while they're out there trying to kill them, the ambush happens. The other people come in the city and lock the gate and say, "You know, you can't come back in. We're going to kill you now that you're outside the wall," and they annihilate them. That's the plan. What I want you to remember is this. Some of the people would get to be with Joshua. Some of the people were to be secret, and no one would even know they were around. Another group was held in ambush, and they had another leader, but it was a whole different organization related to the battle, but only one really got the glory. That didn't seem to bother them. They moved into Ai. Verse 3, Joshua arose and all the people of war to go to Ai. He chose 30,000 men, valiant warriors, and sent them out at night. And he commanded them, saying, "See, you're going to ambush the city from behind it. Do not go very far from the city, but all of you be ready. Stay near. I and all the people who are with me will approach the city, and it will be about when they come out to meet us at the first that we will flee from before them. They'll think we're running, we're retreating. And they'll come out after us until we have drawn them away from the city, and they'll say, 'They're fleeing from before us as at first, so we'll flee from before them.' And you shall rise from your ambush and take possession of the city, and the Lord your God will deliver it into your hands. And it will be when you have seized the city, you'll set the city on fire. See, this is what I've commanded you." They get a whole lot of the glory, and these guys are retreating. Principle number 3. They worked as a team to accomplish the objective without jealousy.
We can see the value of looking back on ancient history as we benefit from the application coming from this Old Testament story. Even though the outcome of Jericho's dilemma is familiar to us, we never tire of hearing how God united Joshua's army through a common cause. You're listening to Insight for Living, online at insightworld.org. And please stay with us to hear a conversation with Chuck Swindoll. With June right around the corner, it's the time of year we begin to celebrate God's faithfulness to this ministry. Our anniversary marks another milestone. It's been 34 years. And we thought you'd appreciate hearing an update from Chuck Swindoll about the health and status of Insight for Living. First, however, I'll encourage you to grab a pen or pencil so that you can jot down our contact information. We'd like to send you a Bible study tool that ties in naturally with today's study in Joshua. The book is called Insight's Bible Application Guide, Joshua through Esther, a life lesson from every chapter. And it's yours when you give a donation of any amount. Make a donation online at insight.org. More details in just a moment. Right now, Chuck is with Insight for Living board member Roger Kemp.
Chuck, we've chosen a theme during the month of June. We're talking about yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And we chose that because we're celebrating 34 years, as you know, ministry, and 34 years of God's faithfulness.
Yeah, hasn't He been faithful, Roger, over all these years? So grateful for that. And never more so than this year.
Well, yeah, because you know, if you'll recall, and we certainly do,
I'll never forget it.
That we were having a difficult time and kind of navigating through choppy waters. Mm. And actually, our financial picture at that time was quite bleak, and we were forced to trim the sails significantly.
And did we ever trim them? Cut back on our staff here at the Insight for Living headquarters? We cut back on salaries. Some had to leave because they couldn't live on what we were able to pay, right. And that broke our hearts, gifted people having to go somewhere else. I mean, we really cut back. Let me say this without leaving you with a false impression. God met the need through the giving of so many people who took us seriously, and they understood it wasn't a cry wolf type thing, right, where we made up the need. We don't do that kind of thing. After all these years, I wish people would know that. Every once in a while, I need to say it. But as a result of people's giving, we got back on our feet. Just recently, we're able to bring the salaries back in line to where they should have been back then. and not yet hired, but we hope to in the future because we're sort of back on our feet and we want to stay there.
Right.
So let me add this too. Let me appeal to your friendship with us. Let's go there. Now, I'm going to boldly ask you to join me in this campaign to make an impact through Insight for Living. The only way we can stay standing up rather than belly up is that people just like you, and I'm talking directly to you today, they will step up and say, I want to now be a part of this. You see, it doesn't take long for you to give, but I can assure you, your gift has long-standing impact with us. So even before you decide what that amount will be, let me thank you. Thank you for hearing us, believing us, and giving to us.
And let me give our contact information a couple of times so you can jot it down. Choose one of two ways to respond to Chuck Swindoll. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. Or online, go to insight.org. When you respond with a donation of any amount, we'll say thank you by providing the brand new study tool called Insight's Bible Application Guide, Joshua through Esther, a life lesson from every chapter. And this is one of the last days we'll be making this offer on the program, so be sure to make your request today. Again, if you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. Online, go to insight.org. I'm Dave Spiker. Chuck Swindoll's series on the value of authentic relationships, Dropping Your Guard, continues Friday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, United and Invincible, was copyrighted in 1981, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2013 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.